Well, today's a day like no other. Hello, and no matter what season of life you are in, there is hope. Welcome to our daily broadcast, Hope for Your Heart. At this time, I would like to introduce Senior Pastor Calvin Corbin from Hickory Ridge Community Church in Chesapeake, Virginia, who has an encouraging message just for you.
Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to Hope for Your Heart. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Pastor Calvin Corbett with Hickory Ridge Community Church coming to you today, and I'm so glad that you're joining us today. I want to begin our broadcast today by telling you a little bit about how we got where we are as a church. God has really blessed us in so many ways. It amazes me how God has blessed us. And I want you to know that I believe that Hickory Ridge Community Church would be where it is today with or without me. And I am just honored that God used me and my wife to start the church, but it would be there with or without me because God so wanted to have a church where we are located right there in South Chesapeake in the Hickory section of Chesapeake, Virginia. As a matter of fact, let me tell you how it all came. The land that we have, God has blessed us with 35 acres of land. It's an amazing, beautiful piece of property in Southern Chesapeake. And that land was one day owned by the Green family. And Mr. Green was a local farmer here in Chesapeake, and he had a small farm. Back in the day, everybody had these small farms, and they were 30, 40 acres or so in size. And he farmed that land, and as he got older, he decided he would pass that land onto his children and hoping that they would continue to farm. But he realized, as many farmers did, that the day of the small farmer is pretty much non-existent. The larger farms have kind of squeezed out the small family farms, and he kind of saw the handwriting on the wall, and so he decided that he would pass on the farm to his children, but he gave them this exhortation. He said, now listen, if you want to sell the farm one day, I get that. You know, not everybody's going to want to go into farming, and it's hard to make a living as a small family farm. He said, but if you decide one day to sell the farm, would you please give first option to a church? I'd love to have a church on this property. Well, you fast forward the story, and another church actually bought this piece of property, and they owned it for many years, and unfortunately, they were never able to do anything with it, and so they were leasing it back to a farmer, and the denomination that owned this particular piece of property decided that it was time to let this property go, and so they put it on the market. They were tired of paying taxes on it and holding on to a piece of property that would never be used for their particular denomination, and then here comes Hickory Ridge Community Church. And we looked at this piece of property, and I remember we put an offer on that property, and they rejected our offer, and we thought, well, we're not going to be able to get this land, and God must have something else for us. And about 6 months goes by, and the real estate agent called me and said, hey, are you guys still interested in buying this land? And I said, we certainly are, but we don't have a whole lot of money. We're just this small, fledgling little congregation. And says, hey, if you can come back with a counteroffer, maybe they will consider it. And they did. Did you know that we were able to buy 35 acres of land, prime real estate in Hickory in 2001 for $205,000? Unbelievable, right? Well, I remember we got there and we prayed one night over that land and we walked over to that land and we prayed that God would give it to us and he gave it to us and then we'd be able to build buildings there and just to see God do incredible things. One of the things that we wanted to drive home as a congregation is we want people to feel when they come to our church that they're coming home. I was asking one of our members one day, I said, when you think about home, what do you think about? He said, I think about a place where I get help from others, a place where I feel stronger, a place that I feel encouraged, a place that I can just kind of relax. And so we came up with this acrostic for home. H-O-M-E, home or homes. Helping others makes everyone stronger. Helping others makes everyone stronger. And so as you think about helping others, I want to talk to you about that today. And I'm going to be looking at Luke chapter 14. Before I get to Luke chapter 14, I want to look at Luke chapter 4, where Jesus is speaking. And Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, to recover the sight of the blind, to release the oppressed, and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. As we look at this particular passage, and then we look also at Luke chapter 14, we discover some interesting things about how we are instructed to minister and who we are instructed to minister to. So I want to go through that this broadcast with you. Number one, we are to minister to the poor, the have-nots. Luke 14:21 says this, "The servant went back and reported to his master. The owner of the house became very angry, and he ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys in the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame." Now, you know this story. A banquet is being held. The invitations are going out to family and friends, but family and friends are too busy that they don't come. So we got to have our banquet hall filled. It's ready. We need people here. Who do we invite? Very quickly go out into the streets, into the alleys, bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. So we think about who these people are. They are the materially poor. They are the morally poor. They are the spiritually poor. Well, Jesus himself said this, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven," or the kingdom of God. So we discovered that we should minister to the have-nots, those who are not as fortunate as we, that is the poor. But secondly, we're also to minister to the brokenhearted. We could say that the poor are the have-nots. We could say that the brokenhearted are the ones that have been let down, the letdowns of our society. Psalm 69:20 says, "I am crushed by insults and I feel sick. I have hoped for mercy and pity, but there was none." There's a lot of people in our world that feel this way. They feel disappointed. They feel rejected. They feel resentment. You know, the Bible says in Psalm 34:18 that the Lord is very close to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who have a crushed spirit. You see, there's nobody that can get through life without letdowns. You know, there may be somebody that needs to hear about Jesus today. There may be somebody that you know that has been disappointed, somebody that's been rejected, somebody that's starting to be filled with resentment. The Bible tells us that we are to go to them, the brokenhearted. You know, that's where Jesus went. Jesus went and he ministered to those who were brokenhearted. As a matter of fact, as Jesus is ministering one day and he's out there and he begins to speak and somebody hands him a scroll from the prophet of Isaiah. Isaiah is that book in the Old Testament. It's handed to Jesus. He begins to unroll it. Didn't have Bibles like we did today, and we can flip pages. It was a scroll. He unrolled it. And as he unrolls it, he stops at a particular section. Our Bibles would be Isaiah 60, verses 1 and 2. There weren't chapter headings in the scroll, but Jesus knew exactly where to go as he unrolls this scroll to that specific spot. And then he begins to get that crowd around him, and he reads that old, old part of the scroll, these words, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, and he has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom to the prisoner, to recover the sight of the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then he rolled up the scroll and he gave it back to the attendant, and he sits down. So people ask, well, why was he sitting down? Oh, because in those days, the teacher sat down and everyone else who listened to him would stand up. I kind of like that idea. Maybe we'll do a role reversal on Sunday. I'll sit down and make the congregation stand up. That's probably not a good idea. One pastor jokingly asked his congregation this question. "Do you know why I preach so long? Why I preach my sermons as long as I do is because every Sunday I get up." He says, "I begin my sermon, and just before I begin my sermon, I put a search in my mouth. I put it right down back in the corner of my mouth, and when that melts away, then I figure it's time to quit, and I sit down." Last week, he said, however, I had a different problem happen. Instead of putting a search in my mouth, it was a button. So I just kept on going all day on, kept on preaching and preaching. I know that's a bad joke, okay? That's what you would call a really bad dad joke. But Jesus rolls up this scroll and he sits down and the eyes of everyone are fastened to him. This is a moment. And he begins teaching them by saying, "Today, this scripture that you have just heard is being fulfilled in your hearing." Jesus is actually reading Isaiah 60, and some manuscripts leave out part of that last phrase. But Jesus adds it in by saying, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." What we like to do is we stand up and we make an announcement of what we're going to do, and then we go do it, right? Isn't that how many of us live our lives? And it's how we lead the church, right? We get up and say, "Hey, guys, we're going to do this, and help us do this," and then we do it, right? Well, Jesus did just the opposite. He went out and he did for over a year ministering to the poor and healing the blind and healing the lame. And then Jesus says, this is being fulfilled in your ears. You know, you've heard that phrase, practice what you preach. Well, Jesus did the exact opposite. He practiced what he was already preaching. He understood that he had to reach out to the oppressed. So we're told that we have to reach out to the have-nots, to the let-downs, and here's a third group of people that we should reach out to, the imprisoned or the locked-up people. You know, if you go to Hickory Ridge Community Church in the Hickory section of Chesapeake, within a 9-mile radius of our church, there are 5,000 people locked up. As you go through that same radius, there are 50,000 people who are locked up also, but they're not behind bars. They're locked up because of their sins and because of their trespasses. Did you know that in America, that there are 2.5 million Americans who are behind bars? 2.5 million Americans. Unbelievable. But there's also other kinds of incarcerations. You know, the Bible talks about the kinds of prison that we put ourselves in. I mean, here's an example of just one. How about the prison of addiction? Addictions and compulsions imprison us. When people say, I feel trapped, when they use that word, they're talking about being imprisoned. Jesus says, I want to give you a release. I want to set you free. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, there are over 30,000 people locked up. Jesus wants us to set them free. We may not be able to literally set them free, but we can certainly set them free as we share the gospel with them. Well, here's a fourth group of people that we should reach out. We talked about the have-nots. We talked about the let-downs. We talked about those who are imprisoned. And I love how Paul put it in the book of Hebrews, where he says that we should go to those who are in prison and visit them as if we were imprisoned with them. And Jesus himself says that when you've done it to the least of these, my brother, you have done it unto me. But the fourth group of people that we should be reaching out to is those who feel like they are shut out. Now, those would be the blind. Those would be the ones who are lame, the ones who maybe have mental health issues. Did you know that there are over 50 million physically blind people in the world today? And untold billions who are spiritually blind. You know, there's many types of blindness. My wife has night blindness. She has a hard time driving at night, especially if it's raining. And so most times, 99.9% of the time, I'm driving at night because I don't want her driving with that night blindness. There's also color blindness. Some of you may have that. There's motion blindness. There's many kinds of blindness physically, but there's also other kinds of blindness that you may not have realized. You know, there's relational blindness. What is relational blindness? Relational blindness is when you don't see how you're messing up a relationship. Relational blindness is when you don't see your self-defeating behavior and why every time you get into a relationship, it tends to end. That's relational blindness. And you go from one relationship to another relationship to another relationship, and they keep crumbling around you. You keep saying, what's the problem? And the answer is, you are. What's the common denominator? All these failed relationships, it's you. But you just don't see it. You see, the Hebrew people understood that the Messiah, Christ, was coming, and he would be one that would be able to restore the sight of the blind. In Israel's history, as recorded in the Old Testament, people had been healed of leprosy and other maladies. 3 times, the dead had been raised to life. But the restoration of sight was the sole purview of the Messiah, twice predicted by the great Hebrew prophet Isaiah. We don't see any blindness being healed in the Old Testament. That's always in the New Testament. Here the prophet describes the future joy of Israel being redeemed at the coming of the Messiah. This is how Isaiah put it, Isaiah 35. The desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. They will see the glory of the Lord and the splendor of our God. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come and save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened. Isaiah 42, the same prophet declaring what is going to happen in the future, a messianic prophet. A passage, declaring that the servant of the Lord was going to come and call you into righteousness. It says, I'm going to take a hold of your hand, and I'm going to make a covenant for you, And my people, you'll be a light to the Gentiles to open the eyes of the blind. So we've learned that we're to minister to those who are the have-nots, those who are the let-downs, those who are the imprisoned, those who are shut out, the blind. But we're also, number five, to minister to those who are the oppressed. That is those who have been kicked out, those who have been cast off. We see John 13, verse 15 says, that year of Jubilee, I have given you an example to follow. Now do as I have done to you. This would be that person who is politically oppressed. You know, political oppression is real. Maybe not so much here in America, but it is in other parts of the world. We're protected here, thankfully, because of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and voting and all that happens that we can do here to be not politically oppressed. But around the world, in most countries where there are dictatorships, there's also an enormous amount of political oppression. For example, you probably know this, but right now there are over 35 million refugees living in refugee camps. 35 million people living in camps because they don't have this political clout. They can't be pushed to a place of safety. But let me give you another shocker. Right now, there's also 27 million people enslaved. 27 million people living in slavery. You say, well, I thought we got rid of slavery during the Civil War. Well, we did in America. It's outlawed in the United States, but it's not outlawed around the world. And this will shock you that there are more people enslaved in slavery today than were 150 years ago during the Civil War. There are more slaves today right now in the world than there was 150 years ago. Well, what are we doing about that? What are the people in a slave trade? Why are they there? How did they get there? You know, the number one cause of slavery, sex trading. In fact, that's the second kind of oppression. This shocked me when I read these stats, and I think this is something that is so underreported in our world today. January 2020, California law enforcement officials announced 518 arrests were made statewide in the last week of January. A stat from 2017 says over 8,000 United States trafficking arrests have been made since 2017. Now, this is a cultural oppression. Cultural oppression doesn't come from the government. It comes from the cultures that we live in. You know, in Asia, there are about 60 million girls who are missing. Now, that's simply because they're Asian. It's a result of selective sex abortion. You know, we don't want a girl, so we're just going to go ahead and abort her or infanticide. A baby girl is born, so we're just going to dump her. We're going to neglect her. We're just going to neglect her to the point that she dies. Domestic violence. You know, one of the downsides of this prolonged coronavirus is the fact that there's been an increase in domestic violence. There's been an increase in depression. There's been an increase in suicide, increase in rape and sexual violence. Violence increasing all across the world. You know, each year, 2 million girls between the ages of 5 and 15 are sold into sexual commercial sex market as slaves, sold as prostitutes, sold into prostitution every single year. 2 million young girls. 130 million women have been forced to undergo female mutilation, the so-called mutilation to honor and kill. Now, you think about these things, and these are devastating. Then there's spiritual oppression. What is spiritual oppression? That's another word for it. It's called depression. You know, when you get depressed and when you feel pressured, when you feel oppressed, when you feel that the pressure is on you, when you feel like you're stressed out, you're at the end of your rope, you're ready to throw in that towel. You want to give it all up. You're ready to hang it up. You're ready to chuck it all away. That's called spiritual depression. You see, Satan gives spiritual oppression in your life, and he gives you ideas that you are depressing these thoughts, and then you get discouraged. Jesus said, these are the kind of people that I came for, to release the oppressed and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Don't you love that? Here we see that God has come to those who are the least of these in our culture to bring them life and to give them life everlasting. In the book of Jeremiah, God says this, "Because you have not obeyed the year of Jubilee and done all the things that I've told you to do, you haven't canceled people's debts, you haven't forgiven the people that I want them to be forgiven, and because of that, you're not going to be able to enter into the land, that land of rest that I have promised you." Here we see an entire nation is taken into exile because they violated God's year of Jubilee. Now, isn't this quite interesting when you think about this? And you see what is involved in this. And the year of Jubilee was that year that you were to set the captives free. That was the year that you were to release all debt. That was the year that if you owned a mortgage on a house, that mortgage would be paid. It was to be set free. Debts were to be forgiven, and you were to go on. Slaves would be set free. Amazing. The land would have rest if they would go through this process. Well, how do we go through this process? What are we to do? We're to preach that good news, and that is to the lost. We're to heal the brokenhearted, that is the depressed. We are to proclaim freedom, that is to those who are trampled. We're to provide recovery of sight to the blind, the spiritually blind. We're to release the oppressed, that's those who are fearful. As we think about this opportunity that God has placed before us, I want to close off the broadcast by looking at one final message. It is given to us by the Apostle Paul. We don't need to be driven by fear when we think about all of these things that are coming against us. As a matter of fact, an acrostic for the word fear, F-E-A-R, is this: false evidence appearing real. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and of a sound mind. So Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 9. I'll make a few comments as we close up our time together. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19, and I'm reading in the New Living Translation. Paul says, "I have become a servant of everyone." In other words, Paul says, "I am lowering myself to serve others." Paul, who could have been served, says, "I'm going to serve somebody else." You know, one of the things I look for when I'm looking to hire people at the church, one of the things I look at is, do they have a servant's heart? And I look at little things, right? I look at little things. Do they pick up the trash that's in the church parking lot? Or do they just kind of walk by it? Are they willing to do the menial tasks? Are they willing to clean the church? Are they willing to put on a pot of coffee and serve it to somebody else? Or do they just kind of walk in and think, well, everybody ought to be serving me? Paul says, "I became a servant of everyone so that I can bring them to Christ." Paul says, "I am lowering myself to everyone, not just some people, everyone." You know, this is an amazing thing. I think we get so hung up on ourselves. I love inviting people to the church. And I remember one time I invited this couple and I got talking to them. And I don't usually tell people I'm a pastor. The reason I don't tell people that is not because I'm ashamed of it, because I discovered whenever I tell people I'm a pastor, all of a sudden their guard goes up. And I want people to be real with me. I remember talking to this couple one time and says, "Listen, we got a great church that I go to. And this church is a great group of people." And I said, "Man, you can go to that church and you just be yourself, right? And you come here, great message. We have a good worship team." And I said, "I'd love for you guys to come and visit the church that I go to, right? Because I love it, right?" And this couple, I talked to them, and then I saw them again and I invited them a second time. And they said, "You know, this second time, we're going to come." I said, "Great. I'll be looking for you on Sunday." They came in that particular Sunday. I saw them and I greeted them. I shook their hand. I said, "I am so glad that you came to church this weekend. I hope we can make you feel right at home here." And they said, "Yeah, we are really looking forward to the service today." I said, "Well, great. Let me show you where the sanctuary." They went in, they sat down. And then I got up and I began to give the message. I remember looking at this couple. I could read their lips and said, "I didn't know he was the pastor. I didn't know he was going to give the message," right? And at the end of the service, I said, "How come you didn't tell me you're the pastor?" I said, "Does it really matter?" I said, "I just want you to come and enjoy what God is doing here." Paul says, "I became a servant of everyone so that I can bring them to Christ. When I am with those who follow Jewish laws, I do the same." In other words, I identify where they are. To the Jews, I became a Jew. To those who are subject to the law, I am there subject to the law to bring them to Christ. When I'm with the Gentiles, I fit in with them as much as I can so I can bring Christ to them. But I do not discard the law of God. I obey the law of Christ, which I am to those who are the oppressed. I share in their oppression that I might bring them to Christ. I try to find common ground with everyone so that I might bring them to Christ. I do this for the sake of the good news, and in doing so, I enjoy its blessings. Now, do you get what Paul is saying here? Paul's in essence saying, I will have these connection points with everyone. I'll be connected with the Jews. I'll be connected with the Gentiles. If they are battling with the law, I'll battle with the law. If they're oppressed, I will be oppressed. And we can even take it further by saying, if they are weeping, I will weep. I will weep with those who weep. I will rejoice with those who rejoice. Well, thanks for listening to broadcast today. I'm praying for you that you'll be a servant of all. If you're going to be great in God's kingdom, you must be servant of all.
Hickory Ridge Community Church is located at 3220 South Battlefield Boulevard, Chesapeake, Virginia. Sunday service times are at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We'd love for you to join us. For more information, you go to our website at www.hrcc7.org. No matter what you're going through, remember, in Jesus Christ, there is always hope for your heart.